Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Hey everyone, on today's show, we break down the Giants' loss to the Eagles. We talk about some of the struggles in game planning, why the Giants really blew their lead in the fourth quarter, and talk a lot about the deficiencies on the defensive side of the ball. So thank you guys for listening, and let's get to it. Hello, and welcome to the Big Blue Review Podcast. I am Dan Pizzuta, joined here by Chris Flum, and we are here in the aftermath of a 25-22 New York Giants loss to the Philadelphia Eagles. Chris, I think last week we talked about how what the Giants were doing was playing with fire a little bit in how they game planned against Tampa Bay, and that ended up in a win, but we said it's going to be dangerous if they do that again against Philly, and they might not be as lucky, and I think that's exactly what happened in this game.
Yep. For some reason, trying to pit your team's weakness against the other team's strength didn't work out against a team that wasn't one of the absolute worst in the league. It's amazing.
Let's just get into the game plan part, because that was a big part of what happened in this game, and then by some circumstances became a big thing of what happened after the game. So after the game, Odell Beckham was asked about the deep shots and why there wasn't a whole lot of passes really going out of their way to target the Eagles secondary, which was down five defensive backs, five even cornerbacks, not even defensive backs, five corners.
And we could go a step further and say they're also down Jordan Hicks, their top linebacker, who's a really good coverage linebacker. So the outside and the middle of their defense was weak against the pass.
Yeah, so let's just run through who they started at cornerback. Yeah, so let's just go over who the Eagles had at cornerback in this game. Devontae Busby played 98% of the snaps. Cravion LeBlanc played 73% of defensive snaps. Chandon Sullivan played 68% of the snaps. These were the guys that Odell Beckham and Sterling Shepard were going against, and there was just not a lot of plays that tried to take advantage of that. And that it's something we talked about last week against Tampa Bay, where there wasn't a lot that went against their secondary that was making opposing offenses look like the Los Angeles Rams passing game by the numbers. And then going into this game, the Eagles were down their entire secondary. They were down five cornerbacks. The Giants right now have five cornerbacks on their roster. So think about who the Giants have on their roster right now. Now take away all those guys. And could you imagine another team going against that group of secondary players and not throwing the ball down the field all the time?
More specifically, could you imagine that group of secondary players having to defend Odell Beckham, let alone Sterling Shepard?
Yeah, it's insane. And even when these guys were healthy, the Eagles were 32nd in big play rate allowed on defense. And the Giants just took no advantage of that. And it's insane. And for Beckham to come out and say after the game that asking why there weren't more downfield shots is a question for the coach. And he's right that it is. But for him to say, looking at what the Eagles had at the secondary, he would have liked if it was in the game plan more. Good on him. Like, he should be frustrated that wasn't in the game plan. Imagine you having Odell Beckham and not using him against guys that probably at least three quarters of you listening to this have never heard of. That is insane to me. And I think we have to figure out what the reasoning there is. Is it that the Giants just really think they have like such a strong run game that they don't need to throw down the field? And if so that's flawed thinking process. Is it because they don't trust their quarterback to throw downfield that often and take advantage of that? If that's the case, then you seriously need a new quarterback, and you should not be giving us this thing that Eli still has years left if he's the reason you're not game planning. So we need to find out what the reason for these non-aggressive game plans are and fix it, because it's insane. They got away with a win last week, but they played the same game plan this week, and it didn't work, and we saw that coming.
I think they don't do it, and this isn't the first time that they did it against the Eagles. The first time they did it against the Saints, who have a horrific pass defense. This is the fourth or fifth time this season we have seen the Giants go up against a fatally flawed pass defense and just not attack it at all, or at least not until they were desperate. And I think they're not doing it just because they don't want to do it. You know, we saw in the week after the bye week, they came out and doubled down on the short quick passes. The short week, the first time against Philadelphia, they had one of their most anemic passing attacks of the season. You know, both of those times, that's when you see who you are as a team, what the foundation of your offense and defense are. And that's who they are.
I mean, this offense is just, it's so frustrating to watch, especially given how the league as a whole is trending. Everything else is trending towards these deep passes and more aggressive play calling on offense, and the Giants are just completely ignoring it.
Yeah, and especially considering how they are built. Now, yes, most of the Giants' skill position players were, or at least Beckham, Shepard, and Ingram, were acquired by Jerry Reese. Fine. But they're on the team, they're who you have to work with, and they're all three of them are matchup nightmares, along with Saquon Barkley. And the Giants' offense is just handcuffing them. They're asking them to play with their feet in cement and to make any kind of yardage, beat 3, 4, 5 defenders. Like you said, it's frustrating to watch.
Yeah, and it doesn't make any sense. So, I mean, the Giants were able to put up crap load of yards in the first half. They did dominate the Eagles defense, but only came away with 19 points. And I think you could tell at that point, at least you should have been able to tell, that wasn't going to be enough, especially if they let up in the second half like they did against Tampa. And that is exactly what happened. The Giants just stopped being, or not even stopped being, refused to be aggressive really early in the second half when they could have put up some more points. And there were some plays where they were aggressive. So let's talk about the interception to end the first half. So the Giants had 17 seconds left in the first half. They had the ball on the 27 and one timeout. And then Eli throws that bad interception toward Odell Beckham. There were two guys coming in on him. So that obviously is aggressiveness being bad, but that actual play was not bad. It was Eli's decision to throw to that specific spot that was bad. He had the broadcast pointed out that Barkley was open on a checkdown, and as much as we have said stop throwing to Barkley on checkdowns, that is a point in the game where that absolutely makes sense to throw to Barkley on a checkdown, especially with one timeout left. You still probably have one more shot to the end zone before you have to kick a field goal. He also had Corey Coleman as a checkdown option on the other side of the field. And to his right, he had Sterling Shepard on a wide open corner that probably could have gone for a touchdown, but his progression just never went that way. So that play in general was a good call. There were three good options. Eli just took the worst one.
Yeah, I have to go back and rewatch the game still. I'm waiting for the coach's tape to come out. Unfortunately, the NFL Game Pass takes half of forever for that to happen. I do wonder if on that play they didn't have basically two concepts called a man beater on one side and a zone beater on the other, and Eli just went with whichever concept he read, and that's why he didn't go to the other options. Or he just trusted Odell to go up and make a play, which is generally not a terrible course of action. More often than not, one of the best receivers in the league is going to make a play. Like you said, I don't hate the thought process, but again, the decision, not great.
Yeah, being aggressive to try to get another touchdown at the end of the half was necessary. Yeah. They needed that. And obviously, it wasn't, the 19 points they had was not going to be enough. And that was clear almost as soon as the second half started, that they were going to need more points. So yeah, it was definitely going to be a need. And being aggressive there, I have absolutely no problem with. This specific throw, I absolutely have a problem with. There was no way that was going to be completed. And Eli needs to know that. For someone who has loved checkdowns all season, for him to finally want to force something there is not ideal. So maybe let's talk about Eli, as much as we talk about him, I'm not sure if he's going to be as much of a conversation in here for this game, because there's a lot of other things to break down on offense, but Eli was not particularly good in this game. He still had 8 yards per attempt and just under 300 yards passing, but he had a QBR of 46. Again, QBR, if you just kind of break it down, can be a win probability statistic, so teams who have a quarterback who play like Eli did in this game should only win the game 46% of the time. And that's not good.
No, I mean, I'm not sure you can look at the game and say Eli was the reason they lost, but he certainly didn't help them win.
Right.
And that's pretty much where he is as a quarterback. He can quarterback you to a win, but he's not going to have a superhuman effort and will a team to victory. And he's also probably not going to make crippling mistakes, really. He is what he is right now. And like you said, there are so many other things we could talk about.
Yeah, so I think before we get to some of the other things, I think there is a part of Eli that we can talk about, and I think it's with this game plan. So last week he had one incompletion, and I think that's the reason that game plan was able to work. Eli was able to convert on the passes that they had, and I think if he doesn't have only one incompletion last week, they probably lose that game. So what my problem was I thought they were going to learn the wrong lessons from that game against Tampa last week. And I think they did, because Eli was not nearly as good as he was last week. And I think that's part of the reason they lost, sticking with this game plan. Now, as we move forward to some of the things we can really talk about in this game plan, and I think people had a lot of questions about what happened in the second half and how plays were called in the second half. And I know there was a big call that the Giants had abandoned the run, and that, I'm just going to say right now, that is objectively not true in the second half. So the Giants had to punt on their first 3 drives in the second half, but let me read out to you what those plays were. A Barkley run up the middle for 3 yards. Then Eli got sacked on a 2nd and long where they should be passing. Then on a 3rd and 18, it was a Barkley up the middle for 4 yards. Then they punt. The next drive, and this is where maybe you can question what happened, because Barkley was not on the field for this drive. They were getting Gallman some time, but I'm not totally upset with that. I think it's fine to get Wayne Gallman a drive at some point. But those plays were Gallman for 5 yards. Gallman for 7 yards, but then a false start by Nate Solder, then an incomplete pass on 1st and 15, then a -3 yard run on 2nd and 15, and then a -2 yard pass on 3rd and 18 after a timeout to avoid a delay of game. So the Giants are running, and then the next drive is when they went 3 and out on 3 passes where there were 2 incompletions and a sack on 3rd down. But there were plenty of runs there. It's just there were penalties that pushed them back. There were sacks that pushed them back. And that's what pushed the Giants back and did not allow them to go. There were plenty of runs there. The problem was some of them just weren't successful.
Yeah, and the first half was basically convinced the Giants they could run the ball, but that was mostly just Saquon Barkley doing Saquon Barkley things and making other elite athletes look silly.
And that was almost all the long touchdown run. Because if you look at what Barkley did by success rate, by expected points added, so this measures how many runs he had that had positive expected points added, only two of his 13 runs in this game had positive EPA. That's a success rate of 15.4%. That is terrible. So if he stayed with the same success rate in the second half, he would have been putting the Giants back anyway. And that's one of the problems of being so run heavy like that, is when the plays aren't working, that he can put the Giants back by trying to establish the run or whatever you want to call it. Wayne Gallman, for how angry you might be at Barkley not being on the field, 4 of his 5 carries had positive expected points added. So that's an 80% success rate. So there's a huge difference there. So to say that the Giants abandoned the run in the second half is absolutely lazy. And I'm calling out whoever wanted to say that after the game, because it's objectively just not true. That is not why the Giants blew the lead in the second half. It's not.
In fact, I would say the Giants should probably have a lot more plays, if they even have any, with both Gallman and Barkley on the field. And a little bit of housekeeping we didn't mention was that Evan Engram missed the game due to a very late hamstring injury. After the inactives were declared, he tweaked, pulled. I don't know, maybe you have, Dan. I haven't seen the severity of the injury, but during warm-ups, he injured his hamstring and didn't play. But I'm not sure you can tell me that Scott Simonson is a better option than Wayne Gallman if you want to move the ball and score points.
Right. I would love to see more plays with both running backs on the field at the same time. Both of them can catch the ball too, so that doesn't take anything away in the passing game. And I mean, as big of a loss as Engram should be, he's obviously shown up with really big plays at the end of the past two games, the last 2 weeks, but he has
maybe
not
that's
been,
why the Giants lost. Right, they didn't have their fourth quarter secret weapon.
That's right. They didn't have their closer. As banged up as this secondary was, as banged up as this Eagles secondary was, even not having Engram should not have been that big of a deal for this offense. And they still were able to move the ball in the second half. The problem was what happens once they get down to the red zone. And I think that was absolutely an issue in this game. They completely cramp up now once they get to the red zone. So on their second drive, once they get to first and goal, they have Barkley for 1 yard, then Barkley for 2 yards on second and goal from the 9, and then an incomplete pass to Barkley that, you know, maybe had some defensive contact there, but again, you're not even throwing to the end zone until a third and goal from the 7. And then in the drive late in the game, when they're down 22-19, they get inside the red zone. There's a short pass to Shepard on first and 10 from the 17. Then there's a 1 yard run from Barkley on second and 5 from the 12. And then they don't throw toward the end zone until third and 4. Again, that's another pass with Beckham where there was some defensive contact, but you can't just hope there's going to be defensive contact on these plays. You have to try. And again, there's just short yard runs to Barkley right up the middle that are not working and are putting the Giants in a third down situation where they have to throw, and you can't always trust them because they have actually been really bad on third down. There was a chart I put in the offensive preview for this game on Big Blue View that was one of the craziest third down splits I have ever seen. One of the best ways to convert third down is to not face them. And the Giants have actually been good with that on some. They had, coming into this game, like 78% of their first downs came on first or second down. And that is incredible. But the problem is when they don't gain yards on first and second down, they have the longest average third down in the league when they do face it, and they are awful at converting third down when they do face it. And that ended up being a problem late in this game. They run these unsuccessful plays on first and second down, and they put them in third and long, and they just can't convert. And that was, again, something that happened, especially when it happens in the red zone here, and that's when things turn into field goals when they should be scoring touchdowns.
Yeah, and I think that plays into the, say, the identity crisis the Giants have. They're built to be a chunk yardage team, and they're almost like the Yankees hitting home runs. If they're going to score, it's going to be on the long ball. And if the Giants are going to get a first down, it's because they're going to be picking up yards on either first or second down. They just don't have it in them to be a methodical short yardage team.
Yeah, so let's keep with that analogy. Imagine the Yankees have all these home run hitters, and imagine having a coach come in or a general manager come in and tell them they should be hitting ground balls through the middle.
Yeah, that's exactly where the Giants are right now. They've got home run hitter after home run hitter, and they're telling them to hit ground balls through the gap between short and second, or bunt down the third baseline. That's kind of ridiculous. Actually, no, not kind of. It is.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And it's been a problem for the offense. They've been able to hit more big plays as of late, so it's covered up some of the problems. But when you have a game like this, and they need to have those types of plays, they can't convert. But I think for as much as we will harp on the offense, and that's obviously easy to do because it was not great in this game, or at least not where it should have been, especially from the game plan perspective. But I think we should jump over to the other side of the ball, because again, the defense was not good. And part of why the offense should have been more aggressive early is because we knew this defense was probably going to give up some plays late, which it did.
That's pretty much what they always do. Part of it is the offense gets to a spot where they just can't sustain a drive, and the defense will get gassed, I suppose, even though in this game, the Eagles and the Giants had almost the same number of plays. I believe the Giants had 62 offensive plays. The Eagles had 65, which is really what a defense is expected and conditioned to be on the field for. But eventually, the other team is just going to break through. We see it again and again and again and again. Part of it is because the Giants have no pass rush. Even with Olivia Vernon back, he has been a severe disappointment. And they don't seem to be able to get much in the way of pressure on the quarterback unless they're blitzing. And even then, it's spotty. And the coverage is worse than a cell phone back in 1998.
Yeah, I mean, they are working through a lot on the back end of the secondary, but it's the same things we see over again. And now I think there's even more stress on that secondary because Landon Collins has been playing more linebacker over the past couple weeks.
Which for him is not a bad thing.
Right. So when you're looking at that, I don't think that's a bad thing. I like him I think now he is playing that money backer role where he's lined up like next to Alec Ogletree on a lot of these plays now. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's probably where he's best suited. We can disagree on whether putting him in that position and having him cover some tight ends one-on-one is the best use of him. But I think overall, having him in the box is not a bad thing, but now that's putting more stress on some of these guys in the secondary. It's putting more stress on B.W. Webb. That's putting a little more stress on Grant Haley, who I think did have a pretty good game. He had a tough ask for most of the time on Golden Tate in the slot, but I think he played pretty well, considering. Sean Chandler is playing more, and now that puts Curtis Riley in single high sets more often, and that, as we know, is not a great thing for the defense. So that puts a lot of stress on that secondary, especially when they are sending these blitzes and they're not always getting home.
Exactly. And I think the problem isn't Landon Collins per se. It's that they don't have the pieces around him to use him at his best. You know, a free safety, and we've talked about this before, a free safety is important, really important, way more important than it gets credit for being in a modern NFL defense. And when you're running basically a blitz heavy cover one defense, which you need that single high safety taking away the deep routes or recognizing where the offense is going and providing the double team where it has to be, you cannot hide bad free safety play. You just can't. And the Giants also need one good linebacker.
And maybe that's why Landon Collins is playing more linebacker now, because they do need that. But I think we need to talk about Alec Ogletree again, because he was bad in this game. I mean, it's maybe not things you would see unless you're paying a close attention, but just, I mean, rewatching the game, it was, sometimes he does what he's supposed to do to a fault. So on the Zach Ertz touchdown, it was a 15-yard touchdown. Ertz, it was like a 2nd and 9. Ertz just ran to the first down marker and turned around, and Ogletree kind of had his feet planted in zone coverage exactly where he was supposed to be, but didn't react to Ertz, even though he was the only player remotely close to his zone. Ogletree just kind of stood pat in his zone and didn't react until the ball was thrown to Ertz, and by that time it was too late, and Ertz was able to break through his tackle and then like three more tackles on his way to the end zone. Then there was the Corey Clement 32-yard run in the second quarter. Ogletree, now I don't know what he's thinking. If he just like stays where he was, he should have been able to tackle Clement in the gap, but instead he just forces contact on Jason Peters, who had pulled, and completely takes himself out of the play by basically blocking himself. Like, he didn't need to do that. There was no point to forcing contact with the offensive lineman, and it took himself out of the play and created a wide open gap for a big run. And he gets blocked out of plays so often, and then there was the pass defense that he got credit for, but it was on a blitz. He fell down, and as he got up, Wentz didn't see him, so the ball hit off his helmet as he stood up. And then it almost bounced into Nelson Aguilar's hands, who would have been able to have a gigantic run after the catch if he had caught it. He's either out of position, or he's in position so much to a fault where he's not naturally reacting to anything. And when he's the center of your defense, it's not good. You can't have a defense like that, and it allows everyone else to just run around on the offense, and they know exactly how to take advantage of where he's going to be.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure if it is a lack of instincts or perhaps maybe a slower processing speed, but just all the time, you know, no matter how many tackles he has, you always see him just out of position, either just late arriving, just late getting off a block, whatever, and having a player run through an arm tackle, or him just missing the tackle and as a player runs past him. It's just another thing that's just so frustrating to see, or him in coverage and not picking up a guy running through his zone, you know, just standing there and watching the backfield.
Yeah, he does it a lot of times with running backs. If they come out of the backfield, he'll stand in the middle of his zone, in the middle of the field, and won't react when someone is running past him. He won't leave the zone to like naturally react to something, and he doesn't react until like the pass is in the air, and by that time it's way too late. And for all the talk about how athletic he is and his speed and whatever, everything he has,
it's negated because he doesn't react fast enough.
Yeah, exactly. None of that matters, because his, I guess, I don't know if it's his mental processing speed or whatever, but what he does mentally puts him a step behind, and his athleticism is not good enough to make up for that step. He'd be athletic enough if he reacted when he was supposed to, but rarely does he do that. And
I think if he did, he would still be a Ram.
Yeah, that's probably the case. And I mean, we're not going to get on some of these other defensive players so much because they are young guys who maybe aren't supposed to be in the position they are right now. But Ogletree was supposed to be the guy. And I mean, there were some of us who didn't think he played well as a Ram. Obviously, the Rams were one of those teams, even though they gave him that big contract. But he was supposed to be the guy. They gave up an asset, even though it was only a fourth round pick, but they took on the contract, which was much bigger.
Which forced other moves down the line.
Right, and he was supposed to be the guy in the middle of the defense, and that just, it hasn't worked out. And that's why we will get on him so much, because that was supposed to be the big move that put that centerpiece of the defense and made everything else work. And that has been one of the biggest problems on the defense.
Yeah. And, you know, Tay Davis, you know, undrafted rookie out of Chattanooga, he played the second most snaps among linebackers. But I can't get on him for, you know, whatever mistakes he made. He's an undrafted rookie. You're not supposed to be able, supposed to be relying on guys like that to be a significant piece of your defense, because the guy who is supposed to be the guy can't cover, and you need somebody with some kind of athleticism and functional athleticism on nickel downs, which are most of them.
It's tough to see if that's something that can be fixed. And with something so exploitable in the middle of the defense, I mean, now smart opposing offenses are going to continue to go against that and use that against the Giants. So, I mean, next week they have the Bears. Can you imagine Alec Ogletree trying to run after Tariq Cohen? Like, that's just not going to work.
But that's what we're going to see, whether it's Mitchell Trubisky or Chase Daniels throwing him the ball. That's what we're going to see, because Cohen is their leading receiver.
Yeah, and if not, then it's, you know, Trey Burton, who is able to move at the tight end position. Man, it's just, there's, as we continue to push forward in this season, I think more questions than answers have popped up. And I don't think that was, regardless of whether anyone thought the Giants should be competitive or whatever you thought the end result of this Giants season was going to be, I think along the line, we were supposed to get answers on a bunch of things heading into the 2019 season. And I'm not totally sure if that's been the case. I think more questions have come up than answers have as we look to what this team is going to end up being. And I think a lot of that comes in the defense right now. And that linebacker position is, I think, one of them. Because of the effort that was made to shore up that position, that just hasn't worked.
That, and again, I keep coming back to the free safety position, but I think Giants fans have seen the difference a good free safety can make. You know, look back to when Kenny Phillips was back there. Jason Witten went on, or was asked on an ESPN interview, what kind of a difference Phillips makes or made. And he straight up said that Phillips took plays out of their playbook. They did not run vertical plays when he was back at free safety because they knew they weren't going to be there. You know, the Giants have seen Will Hill at free safety, you know, when he wasn't suspended. And it made an incredible difference. And then they've also seen guys like Brandon Merriweather at free safety and now Curtis Riley. So that's another one I keep coming back to. And it, with the needs they have on offense and the pressing needs they have on offense, the defensive questions might not get answered. Or they can only answer so many questions.
Yeah, that seems to be what is again going to be a struggle and a dilemma as they go into the offseason. And right now, those deficiencies on the defense were a big reason that cost them the game against the Eagles. I think part of it was the willingness to be aggressive on offense, and that's not a personnel issue. That is, I mean, maybe it is if the reason for that is the quarterback. Then that turns into a personnel issue of you're going to need a new quarterback if that's what is making you so averse at being aggressive. But I think that is going to be more of a coaching thing where, as we've said, the offense is just going to be, and there'd be coaching and game planning, but the defense is where this team lacks talent, and it has continued to come up. Last week against Tampa Bay, they were able to just hold on, and like we said last week, they were able to hold on because they were gifted these interceptions by Ryan Fitzpatrick and Jameis Winston. Carson Wentz is not that guy. He's not the guy who's going to be gifting interceptions, and he didn't, and there weren't turnovers in this game. So when the Eagles were still able to move the ball late in the game, those ended up in points. I mean, two field goals and a touchdown in the second half for the Eagles. They were just able to move the ball, and the Giants weren't able to do anything about it. And that's a problem. That has been a problem that continues to pop up. And it's definitely going to be a problem against the Bears next week.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Although the Bears, and looking at the Bears defense, I'm not sure the Giants defense is even going to enter into it. The Bears defense might score enough points on its own that their offense might not even have to take the field.
And we can say the offensive line has been, you know, playing a little better. It's not as atrocious as it was in the beginning of the season. There's still some things that need to be worked out. Giants gave up 2 sacks in this game. But yeah, and like Khalil Mack and Akeem Hicks are going to be no joke. And say Leonard Floyd and the rest of those guys. And the secondary is going to be good. So who knows what the Giants' game plan in this game. The way this season has been going, this is going to be the game where the Giants want to drop back and throw the ball 20 yards down the field against Khalil Mack and Kyle Fuller and Eddie Jackson in the secondary there at safety.
And don't forget Prince Mukamara.
Yeah. So, man, who knows? It's been a confusing, disappointing season. And this was a confusing and disappointing game.
I think we can end right there.
Yeah. So I think that pretty much sums it up. So please subscribe to this podcast if you have not. You'll get these shows. You'll get our draft show at the end of the week. You'll also get 2 Valentine's Views episodes that will be coming. Please rate and review if you have not. Please follow our work at Big Blue View, on Twitter at Big Blue View, Instagram at big_blue_view. You can follow me on Twitter at Dan Pizzuta. You can follow Chris on Twitter at RaptorMKII. We will be back later in the week for our college show. I guess we'll be previewing some conference championship games. Probably diving into another position because we did not do that this past week. But we will be doing that. Thank you guys for listening, and we will talk to you again soon.
My name is Spencer Hall.
My name is Jason Kirk.
My name is Ryan Nanny.
And when we combine, we form the
Shutdown Fullcast.
Voltron!
I keep telling you, we're not Voltron.
The Shutdown Fullcast is technically a college football podcast, but it's also a show about
lawn care disasters,
regional grocery stores we love,
Tennessee Batman,
homeowners associations,
Bears and video games.
I mean, there's also some actual football discussion, like about coaches having huge contracts, or coaches making terrible decisions, or coaches saying really stupid things.
Or the NCAA saying really stupid things.
Yeah, there's lots of stupid things in this big, dumb, beautiful sport.
Sometimes we talk about football games.
Allegedly.
If you want to take college football exactly as seriously as it deserves to be taken, come find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to podcasts like this one.
The Shutdown Fullcast.
It's not Voltron.